Past week, my neighbor across the street, her sister in her early 50s passed away, tragically. On Thursday, I went down to the funeral service in Burlington. One of the challenges of this of the job I have here is I work a lot of weekends, you know, I work evenings, but I do have flexibility in the daytime at points, and I had the flexibility to go down and be a part of the funeral service, the celebration of life service in Burlington. And I almost felt like I was representing the neighborhood down there. Now, I don't really know my neighbors that well. Like, I know them first name basis and friendliness, you know, with your neighbors. But I don't know the intimacy of their life. So it was really a really wonderful experience to go down and see my neighbor, see her brother and her sister, meet her parents, see them at least, and meet friends and people part of her sister's community. Her sister had a church in Burlington. And I was really touched by the experience of it all. My neighbor was deeply grateful for me coming to the celebration of life service for her sister. Didn't expect anybody from her neighborhood to show up. And I felt it was important, at least from my point of view, to be there. And you know, it's interesting. Sometimes we don't really think that we showing up at things really matters much. Yeah, they'll not notice me if I'm not there. But, you know, events like Thursday remind me again that showing up is a big deal. Like, half the battle in life is just showing up to things. If you show up to them, you've already crossed a major threshold. You'd be surprised the number of people I've met who are in the hospital who get very few visitors. And it's not that they have no friends or family. Just a lot of people don't like to cross the threshold of going into a hospital. And just showing up is a big deal. You know, I was at the service, you know, it was an Anglican priest leading the service. I was listening to it. And I was reminded again when people came forward to talk about the sister, the person who died, when they got up to the front, guess what they talked about? How this person loved others. That's all they talked about. And I was just reminded again, that's all people talk about when they come up to the front at a podium and they talk about the person who died. It's all people want to talk about. It's not that other things don't matter at all, but at the end, when we're right at the very end of life and we're thinking and reflecting upon the person, what people want to talk about is the love that person gave and the love that person received. Everything else seems to just fall away. Especially the love that person gave, the blessing of their love to their neighbors, to their family, their friends, their community, all the ways this person touched the world and made it a richer place. That's what people want to talk about at the end. People want to celebrate the love. People are not really interested that much in talking about how much money that person made. We never hear about how big their bank account is or was when they died. We don't hear about the fancy cars they drove or the spectacular holidays they went on or the fancy or lavish jewelry they wore. That all seems to just disappear. No, what people want to talk about is how that person touched their life and touched the life of people around them. And it got me thinking, and you've heard me say this before, but it's so easy to forget this, that if love is the only thing that matters in the end, if that's what matters in the end ultimately, the love you give and the love you receive, especially the love you give away, then don't you think it's really the only thing that matters in the moment today? Really? Because that's what people are going to remember about you. They're not going to remember the clothes you wore, well, most of the time. They're not going to really remember your hairstyle or the glasses you wore. They're not going to remember about the cars you drove or even make a big deal about, you know, about the things that you find personally important. What they're going to remember about you is your love. And it's the only thing that people are going to want to talk about you when you go. It's the only thing. And so I think that people are going to hopefully talk about me too when I go, is the love I gave and the love I received too. Because that's all that matters in the end. And yes, I know there are practical aspects of life that concern us. There's no denying that. We have these basic needs, bodily needs. We need lodging, and that's really important in today's world. The crisis of lodging in our culture today is serious. You need food, you need heat, warmth. But even here, I think if we make love our primary concern, we go about the way of love that Paul talks about in 1 Corinthians 13, a love that's patient and kind and long-suffering, a love that does not envy or boast, a love that's not proud or self-seeking, a love that's not easily angered and keeps no records of wrong, a love that rejoices in the truth, that always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. If we let that love shape our life in the moment, as we go about the things of our daily life, and we trust God with our needs, Jesus tells us that we become free agents of God's will for us, which is love. And we fulfill God's purposes for us. We fulfill God's purposes for why we were created. And miraculously, we're told, our basic needs become more easily met. I was mentioning to you last week that God's probably more interested in how you do things than in what you do. And admittedly, they're part of a team. I wouldn't deny that. The what matters, but I was mentioning to you last week that God is probably more interested in how you go about things than what you specifically do. Like, do you and I, do we go about our things with a selfish spirit? Do we put our self-interest and personal gain again as our number one priority in life with interactions with other people? Are we committed as a priority in our self-serving ways? Or do we make God's priority of love the first thing in our life? Do we commit ourselves to living out as a priority God's will of love for us in our relationships with others? Now, the Bible says we're all sinners, which sadly means we have great difficulty completely separating our motivations from self-interest. We replace perfect love with the myriad forms of unlove in life, again and again and again and again. And it's easy to move from sin into what I might call practical atheism. Now, the vast majority of us who are here today believe in some higher power. I don't doubt that, the vast majority of you. And most of us are comfortable using the word God to describe that higher power. And many of us here believe that the Bible is an inspired text. And again, many of us here believe that Jesus is the Son of God come into the world to reveal the true nature of God to us. If someone asked you if you were an atheist, I would imagine the vast majority of you would say, no, of course not. But then we substitute our own will for God's will when it comes down to the practicalities of life. We might believe in God. We might believe in Jesus Christ. But we live our lives practically as atheists, divorced from any serious consideration of God's will for us in what we do and how we go about doing it. Probably a simpler way of explaining this would be the old joke, and you've heard me mention it many times, you've heard it before. How do you make God laugh? Punchline? Tell him your plans, right? Yeah. I've heard it so many times, I don't quite laugh like I did the first time I heard it. The first time I heard it, I really laughed at that. That was really funny. I was kind of convicted in that moment. You know, the absurdity of me telling the infinite my finite plans. Telling God with a certain confidence what my plans were. What nerve, really, when you think about it. What nerve! I imagine the infinite God chuckling to himself because he knows better than I what lies around the next corner in my life. You thought you knew where your life was going, Mark, didn't you? Sorry. First time one hears that joke, it's funny. But then we keep making the same mistake. Again and again and again. We keep telling God our plans. We keep telling God our plans. We keep telling God our plans. Or we just tell life our plans. Or we tell people our plans. As if we are in control of our lives. That we have some ultimate say on our future, even our destiny. The truth is, we have no idea about the future. We don't really. We have, by right, no claim on the future either. The future owes us nothing. Yet we talk about life as if we are confident about what the future holds for us. And we have built this grandiosity about ourselves. We don't even most of the time recognize it at work in us. James says today, as it is, you are full of your grandiose selves. James highlights this today in his letter, what we might call the five assumptions of the practical atheist. And I say practical atheist because it would expect this of an intellectual atheist, someone who doesn't take God into consideration into their lives because they don't believe in God. But the practical atheist is one who claims one thing, believe in God, yet behaves in another way. And these are the five conditions of the practical atheist that James lays out in his letter today. The practical atheist assumes when he will go, where he will go, how long he will remain, what he will do, and what the outcome will be. And just so we're clear here, we'll put it in the feminine voice too. When she will go, and where she will go, and how long she will remain, and what she will do, and what the outcome will be for her. That is, the practical atheist works out his or her life independent of any consideration of God's will or wisdom for them. In a sense, that person is indistinguishable from the intellectual atheist. James says today, and now I have a word for you who brashly announce today, at the latest tomorrow, we're off to such and such a city for the year. We're going to start a business and make a lot of money. I mentioned to you before that I grew up beside a neighbor, like literally next door to someone who was constantly talking about his retirement plans. I was a teenager at the time, about Luke's age. I was a teenager. And every time I went by him, he was cutting his grass, doing his gardening, he'd always tell me about his plans, what that would come about when he retired. He and his wife both worked at Stelco in those days. They were both retiring at 55 and selling their place and moving up north to develop their cottage property. Every time I talked to him, he would tell me about his Muskoka dream. And then he turned 55 and he retired, and his wife had 6 months to go, but unfortunately for her, she got cancer and died before she retired. She didn't make it to 55. And his plans were completely overturned because his Muskoka dream was predicated on her being with him. With his wife gone, there was no Muskoka dream for him anymore. He hadn't seen this coming. And I wonder if he ever told God his plans. God, I'm going to retire at 55. My wife and I are going to retire at 55. We're going to sell the house, and we're going up to Muskoka, and we're going to develop our cottage property. That's what we're going to do. He told everybody else about his plans. I wonder if he ever told God in a moment of quietness. If he did, I don't think God would be laughing at what he was saying to him. I don't think God would be laughing this time, though. Probably more like shedding a few tears for this man. How do you make God cry? Tell him your plans. See, this man didn't see this coming, his wife's death. He didn't really even take this possibility into his calculations, his considerations. He had planned his life as if he were in control of his future. And the ultimate irony of all is that 2 years after she died, he died of cancer too. And he didn't see that coming either. James says, you don't know the first thing about tomorrow. You're nothing but a wisp of fog catching a brief bit of sun before disappearing. Bit harsh, don't you think? But maybe that's the only way we can really hear it, when we're knocked over the head with it. Even in people who claim to be believers, we still live like practical atheists. We still live like practical atheists. We still think that we're in control of the what and the when and the where and the how long we'll remain, where we're going to go, what we're going to do there, and when we're coming back. That's not the case. It's the same, many believers still lived their lives like practical atheists, people who wouldn't think at all about seeking out the wisdom and guidance of God in life. A true atheist, we understand why they wouldn't consider God in their calculations. They don't believe in God, but what do we say who are believers? What's our excuse? We think we have a good line on tomorrow. At least that's how we generally act in life. And I suppose it's a reasonable inference to make, isn't it? At some basic level, tomorrow's going to be like yesterday. It's always been that way until it's not. James says to his readers, show a bit of humility about tomorrow. He says, instead, make it a habit to say, if the master wills it and we're still alive, we'll do this or we'll do that. Now, I'll admit to you, it's hard to live in that place between certainty and oblivion. Who wants to be reminded daily of their own mortality? It's something that we generally want to forget about, just ignore, put off in the corner someplace. We make basic assumptions about life that fly in the face of our fragility and our frailty. And we often miss the deeper point about all, too. James says, as it is, you are full of your grandiose selves. There's that line again. All such vaunting self-importance is evil. In fact, if you know the right things to do and don't do it, that for you is evil. The J.B. Phillips translates these last few lines this way. He says, as it is, you get a certain pride in yourself in planning your future with such confidence. That sort of pride is all wrong. No doubt you agree with the above in theory. Well, remember that if a man knows what is right and fails to do it, his failure is a real sin. If we keep telling God our plans again and again, as if we live separately, independently of God, and we go about our future plans, committing ourselves to our future with a naive confidence, then we are making a big mistake. And we're missing out potentially on the deeper purposes of life that God has for us. I think about my neighbor. What would his life have been had he put all the energy of his Muskoka dream into learning how to love with all his heart, soul, mind, and strength in the moment? If he'd taken all that energy he'd put into his Muskoka dream, instead put it into learning how to love his neighbor as himself in the moment. If he had taken all the energy of his Muskoka dream and put it into loving the world around him with all that he had, loving the world around him with that extravagant love that we were talking about, if he knew the kingdom of God was in his heart and his goal in life was to get that heart out into life, better yet, if instead of focusing on ill-conceived future plans, he had dedicated his life to living out God's perfect love in life with his neighbor as shown in Jesus. Had let go of his plans that had no basis for that ultimate confidence, and had turned his mind instead to learning how to remove the hindrances to love's presence in his life so that the light of heaven could shine through him to the world around him. Imagine how his life might have turned out if he'd done that instead of putting all that energy into his Muskoka dream. And best of all, instead of telling God his plans, he had prayerfully brought himself silent before his Maker so that he could hear God's plan for his life, so that he could grow into living out God's purposes for his life. Imagine what his life would have become. Now, I can't guarantee you he would have lived a day more than he did. I don't know that. There's no way of knowing that, but I can tell you this. When people gathered at the inn to celebrate his life and to talk about him, they would have been lifted up by a powerful love that would have had known really no limit to it. They would have received that enormous blessing of love as they reflected on his life. They would have shared that last moment with him in celebrating him in a joyful presence. Because remember, it's the love you give and the love you receive that matters in the end. Everything else is ultimately chaff. Now, please don't feel that I'm being too hard on my neighbor. His story is my story. And I suspect it might be your story too. We live our lives as practical atheists. We move through the days, the weeks, the months, and the years, and we cast our future without reference or consideration to God's will for us. We tell God our plans, and we place before God our preferences and our priorities. And I think it might be time for us, some of us here at least, to put away our practical atheism and bring a humble spirit before the Lord, as James is talking about today. This might be the right time for you and me to focus more on the how of life and a little bit less on the what. See, because what is really what our futuristic plans are about, what we're going to do. If we can just tone down that a bit, and we can tone down the when and the where in life too, and commit ourselves to the how, to live out a life that's rooted in love, how we're going to live out our life rooted in love with our neighbor, then how can we really fail in the end? No matter the what or the when or the where, if the how is rooted powerfully and correctly, then we can stay focused on God's will for us in the moment. We can be deeply rooted in God's love for us, a love that wants to shine through us into that world around us. And then the future is ours, no matter what happens to us. Because we will now have the perception of heaven shining through us, and we'll see the life around us as God sees it. Those blue skies, those cloudless blue skies, a perception that dissipates all the clouds of despair that come to us. A despair that's often caused by the fact that the future isn't unfolding in the way that we want it to. And finally, we'll see so clearly that we will see as God sees. And we'll look on the world as God looks on it. And no matter what happens in the present moment, no matter what it looks like, we will see the world as God intended it to be. That's the promise that's been given to us in Jesus Christ. It's the reason why God sends his Spirit to us. It's the point of why we are here. Thanks be to God.